Wait, what's that?
It's bacon-flavored fried pork skin with the fat still attached.
Where do you find that?
Yeah, Whole Foods, dude.
That's not okay. There's an epidemic in this country.
Yeah.
What's the ingredients on that?
Let's see. There's not many. So it's fried pork skins, salt, maple sugar powder, coconut, palm sugar, and sea salt.
You know, I looked up online the recipe for heart disease, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, salt, sugar, and fried pork skins.
And dead pig. Yeah. All right, on that note, episode two.
We're rolling,
yeah. I got a little candid footage of Jordan's inside the studio diet.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is kind of like a message in a bottle. If you're hearing this, we've somehow made it on the internet. It worked.
We made it.
My mood lighting Google YouTube search tutorials on how to start a podcast have rendered themselves useful. Out of the gate, this is episode two.
Episode two, RX Radio.
Yeah, big thanks, our producer. And we have a producer. It sounds cool to say that, right? Like, we have a producer. So, Lunderjack Productions, Kyle out there in Toronto, probably freezing his ass off. In Toronto or London? He's in Ontario. And he's cold. I know that.
All right. So that's Canada.
It is Canada. Yes. That thing. It's like your top hat. It's like America's top hat.
Yeah. It's like a big wooded top hat.
Sure. Let's go with that.
Let's get to it. Dr. Jordan Chow, Dr. Jordan Junta here. We're going to talk a little bit today about evidence-based practice and the application, not only in our practices as chiropractors, but also in the gym. Jordan's got some pretty strong opinions here about evidence-based practice. A big thing is research, right? Is it all about research? Is there, you know, what else is there to it?
Well, I mean, there's a revenge of the nerds, right? Like the internet, social media within like the fitness community or whatever you want to call it has given a level playing field, like given an even voice, where before it was like the biggest dude in the gym had the best knowledge. Bro science 101. And it's if you look at like the pillars of evidence base, it's not entirely wrong. It's just there's a massive overcorrection from one side to another, that there's like, you know, these white coat lab rat researchers who are so pigeonholed in their methods that what they come up with a lot of times can't be like effectively applied into the way, either the way we practice or the way we train. So it's just people, I mean, they're doing what we're doing. We're hiding behind titles, you know. We dressed in fucking sweatpants at 8 a.m. can call ourselves doctors. Like, dude, I've worn elastic waistbands to work for the last year and a half.
That's
like,
fantastic.
Yeah, so I mean, don't like, but I mean, that's what they do, right? They get to a certain point, they focus solely on one thing, whether it be the metabolic pathway or some sort of hormone or enzyme or anything. But in that pigeonhole view becomes a lack of like applicability to the people who come across it, right? So, I mean, this episode, I think what I really want to drive home is that evidence-based practice is more than I read an article.
Yeah.
I read a thing on PubMed. It's really, did you read?
Posted this on Facebook and I scrolled past it.
Yeah, I saw
what they really mean.
I liked this infographic on Instagram that summed up like a 41-page paper. Like, no, it very well did not. So I think like, so the pillars of evidence-based practice, as we were taught, is sure, yeah, the research is a part of it.
Yeah, you want the best available clinical evidence. You know, the research.
Yeah.
Then there's the clinical experience.
Sure.
Which is, you know, your personal experience.
Yeah.
Which is that biggest dude in the gym. He's got some experience, right?
Yeah.
So that means something. The research means something. And then we have, you know, the values that we're trying to apply it to, right? So if that's a patient, it's the patient values. If it's, you know, someone in the gym, it's, you know, it might be a little different, but it's still that person, their training methodologies maybe, you know?
Right. I mean, you can come up to me and be like, yo, high intensity interval training, cardio, do it, good for your health. See you later. No thanks, not for me. We're gonna start with you and basically how you sort of appraise evidence or how you look at research from a clinical standpoint. Like in the office, you got an athlete coming into you with an injury. How do you sort of take in all three components of that athlete's, your patient's values, your own clinical experience, both clinical experience and athletic experience, so your experience as a clinician and an athlete, but also what's found in best practice and research. So how do you sort of mix all three of those together, and what weight do you give sort of each one in like a clinical setting?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. And there's, you know, the answer's kind of weighted differently than probably what you would think. A large part of that, especially as I'm sure you know, working with an athlete, patient values plays a huge role in how you're going to treat someone. Yes.
You can't see this because it's radio, but I'm fist pumping in the air right now.
Yeah, he's doing this dance. He looks like a big Canadian grizzly bear.
I was going for like the Yosemite Sam, like the pistols in the air, like firing off and stuff. But I'll take it.
Anyway, so yes, I'm assuming that means you agree with me.
Yes.
One thing that I've noticed with an athlete, whether you know, it doesn't matter the level. It could be you know anyone that walks through this door in this gym. We're in a CrossFit gym right now, Monday through Friday, just for an hour long class. If you tell them to rest for 6 to 8 weeks, because the clinical evidence says it takes 6 to 8 weeks for your soft tissue to fully repair.
The collagen reformation.
Yes, exactly. That's, you know, that's a fact at that point, right?
That is.
You know, you can't really debate that.
Yeah.
You know what they're going to say? Okay. They're going to walk out your door. They're
deuces.
Probably not going to come back until 2 weeks later when, you know, it hurts even worse.
Sure.
So patient values is huge, especially working with athletes. You have to align the treatment plan with their goals and something that they're actually going to follow through on, right? Patient compliance. You have to take that into account when you're doing this.
Now, you being an athlete, do you find you have an easier job with compliance, with that buy-in? Because it's like, I mean, we spoke on this last week.
Yeah.
You're in a unique position where people come to you maybe more so because, not more so, but with your athletic prowess in mind and they see your ability in the gym. So does that sort of carry over then with buy-in? Like, do you feel like
Absolutely. They
see your experience, maybe not from a clinical standpoint, but from an athletic standpoint, and you're able to do the things you can do without getting injured, and they're probably nowhere near your skill level or weight or strength. So do you feel like that helps buy-in, that helps compliance?
Absolutely. And one of the underlying projects I have, I'll call it a project, it's an ongoing thing that I do, it's just kind of, you know, for my personal fulfillment, is I try to make stretching cool.
Oh, wow.
In like a subtle, like, fuck you kind of way.
Okay.
Like, oh, wow, that was really cool. You can snatch all that weight.
Yeah.
I stretch every day.
Oh,
you know?
See what he did there, kids?
Yeah.
Wow, the old
like
bait
that.
And switch.
Like, oh, wow, how can you overhead squat, you know, over 300 pounds and only 175 pounds? Well, I get into stable positions because I stretch every day.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
So you're trying to link back your success in lifting with your proactivity.
So,
with.
Exactly. So that's an example of me tying in, you know, using my athletic prowess to be able to, you know, influence patients.
Okay. Let me expand on that. Let me ask you another question because you brought up stretching, which I think in the realm of evidence-based practice is like a huge contentious issue when it comes to injury prevention. Does it, can it, or look at the research on performance, right?
Uh-huh.
Don't static stretch because I read this thing on Men's Fitness that it's going to decrease performance.
Yes.
Not realizing that study was like, you know, hold a stretch for like 10 minutes and then try and jump as high as you can.
Uh-huh.
So how do you, because I know you to be like a mobile dude, but also like really proactive, long static hold stretching is something that you've prescribed to me personally.
Yeah.
Now, how do you sort of, again, weight that? So we flip the same question, but from an athlete's perspective. So, you know, you step out of the office, you're in the gym. How do you appraise what's in research to how you're going to train?
Yes. So this is pretty huge in evidence-based practice is the application, right? So we have, you know, a study that says you should not be stretching, you know, long static holds before, you know, going to do your workout, doing running, jumping, lifting, whatever it is. You have to look at the specific variables of that study. You know, I'm not going to ever prescribe someone, just like you said, you know, go try and get into a split for 10 minutes and then we're going to max out your back squat, you know, back to back. But there is also science to say that a long static hold in a stretch is a great way to actually increase the length of that muscle.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what we need to do in situations where the problem is someone can't get into a stable position because they don't have the length in their muscles or they don't have that range of motion. So I do prescribe a lot of long hold static stretching. I tell people though with a disclaimer, all right, this is what I want you to do. I want you to, you know, get into this couch stretch. I want you to hold it 3 minutes on each side. But I want you to do that at least an hour before your workout or after your workout. So I'm not saying go hold this static stretch and then go right into your workout. What I'm saying is something more like, the problem is, you know, you can't do an overhead squat because you have really tight hip flexors, and that's preventing you from keeping an upright torso, so you're putting a lot of stress on your shoulders. So what I want you to do is fix the problem, which is, you know, lengthen those hip flexors so we can get you into a stronger position so that you're not going to get hurt.
I gotcha. Now, do you ever struggle with, because this, I mean, this goes around, like, the online mobility, stability, you know, guys that do stuff like this, right? Like, physical therapists, chiropractors who are also athletes to some extent. How do you go about explaining that to a patient from an actual, like, maybe like an accuracy level? Like, there's a certain level that you can talk to someone where they're going to understand. So as far as, I don't want to say dumb it down, like you need to like talk down to your patients, but right. In a way, like, you know, the common convention that people think is breaking tissue down, right? Like, right. How do you sort of walk that fine line between being like accurate with your description of the physiology and the mechanisms behind what's really going on, like,
yeah.
Oh, this lacrosse ball, you really get in there and break it up. It's like, okay, if you have some sort of protein collagen deficient vascular disorder, like if you're breaking up your own soft tissue with a lacrosse ball. So how do you, I mean, we're in the Silicon Valley, 90% of people here are engineers. The question I always get is why? It's like, yeah. Working with a bunch of 4-year-olds who are just absolute geniuses, but people want to know, right? So like, yeah, how do you take that on from maybe bridging the gap, which what I think we do a lot of is bridging the gap between our education and our application,
mm-hmm.
As far as like describing mechanisms to a patient, like the long static holds are a great example, because it is something that, you know, if you do hold it for long enough, there is a chance to change length. But stuff like lacrosse ball, myofascial stuff,
right.
how do you describe to a patient what's going on, or to an athlete, like what the mechanism is?
With that, I found the best way to go about it is to be as simple yet concise as possible.
Okay.
So very similar to what I just described is I'll use a lot of words describing the structure of the joint. So I'll tell them, you know, your hip is a ball and socket joint, right? A ball and socket joint has a great range of motion. So with greater range of motion, we need increased stability, sure. Things like that. Just relating bigger picture ideas like range of motion, stability,
okay.
Injury prevention,
I gotcha.
Things like that. As it gets more to tissue level, a lot of times I'll just say, you know, we're flushing the tissue, or, you know,
okay.
A lot of times it's, you know, metabolite buildup or things like that, just muscle breakdown,
okay.
That can cause these things, and we're trying to get rid of that.
So you're meeting them halfway. You're meeting them halfway.
Yeah,
you're not like cyclooxygenase, yeah. Inflammatory pathways, all that. You're okay.
Exactly.
I like that.
You know, my biology teacher wouldn't be necessarily proud with me.
Yeah.
But you know, these people can understand.
Exactly. It, okay.
Right?
Cool. Yeah, I like that.
So it's you got to meet in the middle, and it's more so about. At that point, it's more so about getting that patient to comply than getting them to understand biomechanics.
Right. The best exercise they're going to do, or the best exercise for them is the one they're going to do, right?
Absolutely, yes. Right. It's all about, you know, are they actually going to carry this out?
Sure.
Because I know damn well I can see someone, you know, once a week, and if they do everything I'm telling them in between,
yeah.
I'll see some progress relatively quickly.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, I see someone once a week, they don't do anything in between, they're worse the next time I see them, then...
And that's what always bothers me as a chiropractor, like, I mean, shit, antibiotics get to run for 12 days, I'm supposed to be some silver bullet, like,
oh,
some
yeah.
magic man, like, what the hell? Like,
yeah.
I've come to take in, like, calling my office, and calling, like, the actual gym I work in, like, the treatment room. Because, I mean, me and you yes. work with a lot of athletes, so the compliance is there, because they want to come back, they want to perform, they want to compete. But I mean, I've worked in a, you know, a corporate setting before, and like where the compliance is zero and the attention span is zero. So I mean, I can yeah. give an athlete like circuit pre-workout mobility, and my athlete's going to attest to this, like progressive from, you know, very like inert or static stretching into dynamic, how to load properly. We can go out on the gym floor, but I can give them 10, they'll do 10. They'll do it 3 times a week, exactly as prescribed,
yep.
But then flipping that over, like say you have someone coming in from a corporate job, not really motivated, their friend told them to come in, I'll give them 2.
Yeah.
2 actually. See if you can, so let's start with 2 things like twice a week and see if you can manage that.
Yeah.
So I think that therein comes clinical experience. And I think another thing too is people don't understand that research needs to be interpreted, right? Like, I always compare research to the Bible. You know, you can interpret the Bible and say, you know, maybe it's not good to, like, you sleep with your neighbor's wife or kill someone who cuts you off in traffic. Like, I think that would be a good interpretation of the Bible, a useful interpretation of the Bible.
Things you shouldn't do.
Yeah, you know, but I think if you read it by the letter and you think there was, like, a dude in a whale somewhere who, like, lived and then, like, it was alive again, I think, you know, there's interpretations that can be made, and it's how steadfast your belief system is to buy in to that interpretation to the letter. Is probably a really good analogy of how people look at research, right? Like the zealots who are, you know, in the labs writing the research, you know, they're pumping out NASM stuff, JAMA stuff. They're getting publications and they're getting paid to do it, right? So that kind of leads me to another point on research is sort of intrinsic biases and confirmation biases. Like, you know, there was what Coca-Cola funded that Harvard study about like sugar. No, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah, because you've got $1 billion in like the Scrooge McDuck money pit you're flowing around in that says, you know, hey, Mr. PhD guy doing the research, sugar's fine. You know what I mean? Or like the cholesterol shit, right? Like that's just coming out now after decades of like, you know, people throwing their egg whites out the fucking window like it's going to give their kids cancer or something. It's just, you know, there was a bias behind it, right? Anytime it's institutionalized and there can be a financial upswing to the results of research, you have to imagine like that's up for grabs, that's up for sale. So being able to interpret research too is sort of a big part of how and what and where you apply the research you come across. I mean, the one thing to interpret it, you have to read it, right? Like, I don't go on Cliff Notes to read the Bible. Like, let's see what this is about, right? Let's Wikipedia the whole thing and then pretend to be a preacher. But that's what a lot of people do, right? Nowadays, with, like, the bullet points you come across, you know, if I read something, I don't know why I read it, but, like, Men's Health or Fitness magazine, the efficacy or the level of which that research is held is, like, I would listen to a guy sitting next to me on the bus before I would apply something same that level. I would read in that source, right? But, you know, how many people come across a cute little infographic on Instagram or someone shared something on a Facebook news feed and they just read the title? It's like,
and they preach that now.
Yeah. Oh, what the raspberry ketones or whatever. And all of a sudden everyone's fucking, Dr. Oz in it to, I mean, that's another great point in amongst itself. Like the Dr. Oz effect of how stuff like that can go viral and how it can affect companies' bottom lines. But unless you've subscribed to a journal, clicked past the abstract, downloaded a PDF, read the methods, the subjects, the discussion, the whole nine yards, then you have no basis to preach anything, right?
Yes, you have no opinion on that article. You're just regurgitating
exactly
what someone told you or what a headline was.
It's the most frustrating thing in the world. And I mean, and I don't want to come off anti-research because I think there is benefit there.
Oh, there's absolutely benefit. There's good research and there's bad research, just like anything else.
Yeah.
But
it comes down to the interpretation. Like, I mean, another thing too, just like the way, I mean, for me and you, you know, higher performing athletes, research doesn't study us, right? You're not going to get like the 20 dudes in California regionals together and do a study on them. And you're going to get 10 college males, college age males, untrained, right? That whole gambit that you're going to read. And they're going to study that. So it's like, I always look at it this way. If Bill Gates walked into the room right now and we took the average income of the three of us, dude,
people think we're doing pretty good.
Set for life. But no, I mean, we're still broke as shit and he's got all the money. But with the way research is meant to sort of organize their statistics is that you're going to get an average number to sort of quantify the results of the subjects involved, right? So if you think of that analogy, it's like, okay, is this really applicable to me? Do I fall in that demographic? Do I fall as a potential subject that these people are testing a variable against? So oftentimes, I mean, the answer is really no, right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely not. You know, it's like we said before, research is very controlled. You have, you know, all your variables are controlled except what you're testing, and that's not life.
Yeah.
You know, life is a lot of uncontrolled variables,
getting deep. We're getting deep.
It's not life. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You know, it's not a perfect world. It's not a perfect situation. Sure. Things are going to be different. Every person is different. They're going to react a little bit differently to whatever the stimulus might be. So I think the bottom line here is this: if you can't tell me the methods of that research article, I don't believe you.
I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to hear it. Same. Yeah. Yeah. Same. You don't have an opinion.
Repost it on someone else's page. I don't care.
We're talking about evidence-based practice and application. Those three pillars of the best available evidence, clinical experience, and patient values, and how they play a role in your treatment plan, in, you know, maybe your training methodology. They're not three equal pillars. There's always going to be some that outweigh others. Yeah. And it's not going to be, you know, the exact same situation for every patient, for every person in the gym. Every squat program is not going to have the same results, right? Yeah. We talked about that a little bit before. You know, not everyone should be doing the Bulgarian squat program.
Yeah, no, right? Definitely not.
Sometimes, you know, you got to switch it up. Different people are going to have different results from basically whatever treatment you do, so you have to use your better judgment.
Sure.
And you know that patient's values along with the research to find what's going to be the right answer for that specific person.
Sure. Yeah, I think with that too is like always be critical, whether it be you're critiquing research, you're yes. critiquing evidence you're getting, or you're even critiquing your own experiences, but also be critical of those who only buy into one of those three pillars, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of it's their job, right? Like if you're a clinical researcher, that's what you do. So you're gonna have a certain amount of bias towards that. Or I mean, if you're a gym bro, like, yo, Arnie did it. He rode bike down to Venice Beach. I eat a pie after every workout. What of it? You know what I mean? So it's like if you have someone with just clinical experience, right? This is something we come across a lot. Like you hear sort of not horror stories of other chiropractors or physicians, but people who have maybe been, you know, in the game a little longer than us, yeah. and they can pull that like almost like a seniority card. Yeah. Like, listen here, son. It's like, okay. But that's a red flag for me is anyone who buys in all in
right.
into one of those things is, you know, if your only tool is a hammer, everything's a nail.
Yep.
And if that's the only thing you're bringing to the plate, then you're either doing yourself, your patients, or your athletes like a huge disservice, right? Mm-hmm. So I think thinking critically to appraise each one of those pillars is going to be sort of your best bet in getting the best results for you, regardless of the application, right?
Absolutely, it's kind of like a checks and balance system, you know. Checks and balances.
Tax season, bro. Oh, we're sweating.
Don't remind me. Don't
checks
remind
and
me.
Balances. He's crunching the numbers. Okay, so I think that's we'll call it a wrap for today.
Thanks for listening, guys. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, whatever you gotta do.
Yeah, if you guys have questions, comments, concerns.
We don't want to hear about your concerns.
Concerns, yeah.
Probably not even comments. How about questions?
No, comments. I like comments.
All right, comments are all right.
I think questions would have to be in the form of a comment.
Okay.
On the internet. So go ahead, leave. If you guys, you like it, you want to share, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That would be cool. 4 stars, keep it to yourself.
That's right.
But yeah, that's it for today. We'll see you guys next time.
All right, see you guys.